States have until tomorrow to decide whether they will set up their own health insurance exchanges or default into the federal exchange. What will Iowa do? This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Since health care reform remains a political flashpoint, many states were waiting to see who won the presidential election before deciding whether to set up an exchange. Today, we'll talk about Iowa's situation with Michael Bushlow, a policy advisor on taxes and health care to Governor Branstad, and David Lyons, founding director and CEO at Co-Opportunity Health. Before that, we'll examine the state of rural health care in Iowa. We get started right after this news. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, and we put health care in the spotlight this hour. The 50 states have until tomorrow to decide whether they will set up their own health insurance exchanges or default into the federal exchange. What will Iowa do? We'll take a look at our state's situation in the second half hour in regards to implementation of the Affordable Care Act. But first, today is National Rural Health Care Day, so we'd like to spend the first half hour examining the state of rural health care in our state. And joining us to do that, Vinton resident Kendra Spencer joining us by phone. Hi, Kendra.
Hi.
Great to have you with us. Also
Thank
with
you.
Us, Professor Keith Mueller, a rural health care expert. He is the Gerhard Hartman Professor and head of the University of Iowa's Department of Health Management and Policy in our Iowa City studio. Professor Mueller, welcome.
Thank you.
We want to reach out to our listeners also this first half hour as well. Do you live in rural Iowa? What challenges do you face getting quality health care? What challenges do you face as a health care consumer, as a medical care provider, perhaps, in rural Iowa? 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook, or tweet us at IPR Talk. As I said, the Affordable Care Act, our focus in the second half hour, so please use those numbers, those contacts, to send us any questions you have about the health care exchanges and the Affordable Care Act for our second half hour. Kendra Spencer, you live in Vinton, Iowa. It's a town, for those who don't know, of about 5,000 people in eastern Iowa. And we ask you to be on our program today because you live in a smaller community and because your daughter, Olivia, was born with a serious heart condition, and so access to some quality health care is especially important to you and your daughter. I wonder if you'd mind telling us a little bit about your daughter's condition to start off with.
Sure. Olivia was born with a condition called hypoplastic left heart syndrome. And simply put, this means she was only born with half a heart. She does not have the left side of her heart. So when she was born, she needed a series of three surgeries to basically survive. Her first surgery was at 5 days old. Then we spent about 42 days in the hospital, came home for a few months, and she had her next surgery at 5 months old. And then we came home and enjoyed some time at home until she was three, where she had her third open heart surgery. Now, during that 3 years, she still had to, you know, have the three-month checkups with cardiology and heart catheters and things like that. But we've definitely got to know the healthcare system pretty good over the last 5 years now.
How old is Olivia now?
She just turned five the end of September.
And how is she doing?
She's doing great, great. Looking at her, you'd never know.
Okay, and she's getting to school age now, isn't she?
She is. She actually is in 4-year-old preschool this year, and she just loves it. This has been her opportunity to kind of visit with other kids as an infant and a young child. She wasn't really able to go to daycare or play with friends just because of the risk of exposing her to germs with such a serious heart condition.
Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about how health care was provided to Olivia, given the fact that you're not in a larger community in Iowa.
Sure.
Do you when she has an infection, gets a cold, or some symptoms that you don't feel you can deal with at home, how do you know where to go, or where do you go?
When Olivia was an infant, I always took her to a pediatrician in Cedar Rapids, and then we would go to the university if it was deemed necessary. Since her third open heart surgery, she's a little more stable, so if it's the common cold or a cough, I go ahead and I take her to the family practice here in Vinton. We actually are lucky enough to have a hospital and a clinic here in town. They don't really deal with pediatric cardiology much, but they can, you know, do... the average cold or things like that, which I do feel comfortable taking her there now for those types of things. We still do like the wellness checks or anything like that, anything more serious, either with her pediatrician in Cedar Rapids or with the university.
So it seems it would be an extra set of sort of communication paths between your medical providers in the Vinton area and in Cedar Rapids or in Iowa City.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, they've actually been fairly good about it. Now that we're starting to get into like the e-file or the electronic file system, it's been a little easier. I know not all the doctors are lined up with that yet, but they are trying to get that in line. I believe Dr. Mersch, her pediatrician, can now communicate with the family physicians. Mm-hmm. And they're pretty good about like anytime we visit Iowa City, they send out clinic notes to myself and to her pediatrician. And then anytime, like she also has occupational therapy in Vinton, and they will send out plans of care to her pediatrician and cardiologist once a month as well.
Mm-hmm. What would you say are the biggest challenges for you when you look at perhaps counterparts that you have in the city? What do you have on your plate with Olivia's health care that someone in the city doesn't?
Well, it's kind of trying to balance, you know, where do I go? Is it serious enough that I need to drive 40 minutes to Cedar Rapids, or is this something we can handle in Vinton? And, you know, we still do have our six-month cardiology checks where we go and see her cardiologist in Iowa City. And it's just, you know, it seems like we're constantly having to drive to different areas for different things, which is tough. I you know, if we lived in a large city, it would definitely be nice to have all of this in one place. Mm-hmm. I've never been able to experience that, so I don't know exactly how that would go, but I would assume the communication would probably be top-notch, and it would be a lot easier. You wouldn't have to sit and think, okay, is this serious enough that I need to take her to Cedar Rapids or take her to Iowa City, or can we just handle this here at home?
Professor Mueller, when you listen to Kendra Spencer's outlining the health care needs that she has for her daughter, Olivia, can you say how typical those challenges are that face Kendra and her family?
Fairly typical for communities the size of Vinton. Actually, Kendra and her family have a really good situation compared to very remote rural areas where populations may be down in the hundreds instead of the thousands, and you don't even have the local hospital and a solid family practice clinic in that area.
Mm-hmm. So those are the different areas. So outline sort of the levels that we have. So in parts of Iowa, you're looking at what at the at the low end?
Well, in parts of Iowa where people may be living 30, 40 minutes from a city even of 1,500 or 2,000, so in the northwest corner of the state in particular, that would be what we would call remote rural or at least semi-remote rural. It varies from that to communities the size of Vinton to areas of the state that might surround a city the size of a Fort Dodge or a Mason City, then all the way into when you get within 30 miles, 20 miles of cities the size of Cedar Rapids, Des Moines, Iowa City.
Kendra talked about coordinating with various doctors in different locations. How do doctors coordinate? Is there a plan? Is there a well-thought-out way of providing health care to rural areas, however rural that may be or remote that may be?
You know, that's an area where we're undergoing a lot of improvement now, and Kendra mentioned this, the advent of the electronic health record and what that's doing to improve those communications, a lot more emphasis around integration of care from primary care across a continuum that includes the types of specialists that she talked about in pediatrics and in cardiology. Quite a contrast to as recently as 15 years ago when it would have been relying on telephone calls and occasionally fax machines. So we're coming a long way. We still have, as she said, a ways to go to make sure that those services are fully integrated.
Mm-hmm. What would you say, let's talk about the disadvantages and the advantages. I think there are some of those too. So the disadvantages of being in rural Iowa with health care concerns would be?
The disadvantages are what she talked about. When you need specialty care, especially from physicians and others who really can't be doing that unless they've got a patient cohort the size that you'd have in a city. Then you do have the disadvantage of needing to travel in to receive that care. The advantage in Iowa is that we're still the distances are still short enough. There are things like rotating specialty clinics, say in orthopedics. Our general surgeons are more widely available in Iowa. Another advantage is because we have a state with a lot of local rural hospitals in primary care, you can receive a high percentage of the care locally from somebody you know really well, a highly personalized care because the community is smaller, and you're able to stay in the quality of life environment that you want to. You want to be living in a smaller place, but you still need those primary care services that a small hospital and a local primary care clinic can provide you.
How are we doing in Iowa as far as meeting the demand in rural Iowa for doctors, for nurses, for nurse practitioners?
Well, at the moment, we're doing reasonably well, this whole region of the country, because there have been programs at a lot of our health professions training schools like Iowa. I recently moved here from Nebraska with a similar program. The concern is going forward as there are more people needing and being able to pay for primary care services, we will have shortages that are universal. I mean, urban areas will have some shortages as well, but it'll be more acute in rural because it's always been more difficult to recruit and retain professionals there.
Kendra Spencer, I want to go back to something you outlined. We talked about, you know, how do you know of what degree, what severity of health ailment you may have. How do you know where to go? It seems to me that would be a difficult thing. Is that one of your chief challenges?
It is. It definitely is, especially when Olivia was an infant and, you know, things were a lot more high risk. Basically, I just ended up taking her for every sniffle to the pediatrician, and anytime something didn't seem right, I called the cardiologist. So it was definitely a struggle for me. It's gotten easier now that she's been through some of the open heart surgeries and is a little more stable. I do feel comfortable going to our family practice for, you know, just the average ailments. But, when Olivia was an infant, we did have a scare here, and we are lucky to have the hospital. She, her oxygen saturations dropped, and we ended up having to call the ambulance. Mm. The ambulance from Vinton came and got her. They took us up to Virginia Gay Hospital and were able to stabilize her before then driving us, you know, over an hour to Iowa City. And what scares me is what would have happened had we not had that hospital here? You know, when we got to Iowa City, they told us Olivia was lucky to be alive. What if she made it had we lived, you know, in a town without a hospital, or if it would take the ambulance 20 minutes to get to our house instead of 3 minutes? It's definitely something serious and something that I have a hard time distinguishing sometimes on where to go and when I need to decide if this is something very serious.
Professor Mueller, a grave situation scenario that she outlines. Are there people in rural Iowa who aren't as lucky as Kendra there?
Well, again, Iowa is fortunate that we do have a large number. It's over 80 of the small rural hospitals that Kendra described. So it's unusual for someone to be farther than 25, 30 minutes from getting that kind of assistance. Again, in the most remote areas, it's possible that you would be. I would want to point out that it's a great example of why there are programs to help sustain those hospitals financially. You know, as you might imagine, a small hospital has a very thin margin of revenues over cost for the hospital. So there are payment programs in Medicare and in Medicaid that'll allow them to get paid better than
they
would.
So those subsidies come from the federal government primarily?
Yeah, I would be careful not to call them subsidies. They're different kinds of payment designs. So they're paid based on what it actually costs them to provide care, whereas a very large hospital is paid based on an average cost and then expected to manage to that cost because it has a higher volume of services.
Let's talk a little bit about, Professor Mueller, about technology, the way technology has perhaps improved healthcare in rural Iowa and closed some of the distances in the past couple of decades.
Well, it's another one of those areas like the electronic health record where we are on the cusp of making tremendous advances in what can be available locally. So that we're now able to provide emergency care services with the presence of a board-certified emergency care physician who can remote in to the ER of a small rural hospital and to help with the diagnosis and
initial
treatment.
What does that mean, remote in? That's not calling in. Of course, we can do that before. What does that mean, remote in?
It means you've got cameras in the emergency room so that the physician located, say, in Iowa City, can see exactly what the primary care provider is seeing in that emergency room. It means that the physician from Iowa City or another location is there on camera for everybody to see. So it's interacting just as you and I are now face-to-face.
Mm-hmm. In fact, I think I've seen this in action in a report on TV, actual sort of a robot with a TV screen for a face. And actually the person driving the robot is a specialist in at the University of Iowa hospitals and clinics. And the robot is actually in place at a hospital somewhere else in the state.
So the remote physician is able to move the diagnostic equipment, whether it's a camera or you're starting to get some X-ray for dermatology, can move that equipment around to where they want it to be to get a better view of whatever in the case of emergency room, whatever the trauma is that the patient is experiencing.
After outlining rural health care here in Iowa, where do you see, Keith Mueller, the biggest areas for advances, for improvement, and what will be improved specifically?
I think the ability to do more diagnostic efforts at a local level because of the advances in technology will be a tremendous improvement. I think the ability to use healthcare professionals differently, whether it's an emergency medicine physician or a local EMT provider, a paramedic that might be able to do more things locally than they do now. And then the advent of how we create systems of care, even when they are independently owned providers in rural America, but they're linked with places like the university or Mercy Health in Cedar Rapids.
Mm-hmm. What about cost? Kendra Spencer, do you know if your health care, because you're in rural Iowa, because you're in Vinton, cost any more, any less than someone living in a city?
You know, I honestly don't know the answer to that question. I don't believe so. I know that our insurance company, we all have the same rates for all of the employees that we have. And we do have employees spread out through Nebraska and a lot of Iowa.
Right. And certainly because of the travel time incurred. Over an hour to, what did you say, an hour, hour and a half to Iowa City, you're going to have those costs, that time and the gas money there. Keith Mueller, anything on the cost front that you can mention, the differences?
Well, the costs in rural America sometimes are lower because the fees charged by the physicians and clinics who are there are lower than they might be in an urban area. But Kendra's right. By and large, there's not a lot of difference. The difference comes across regions of the country. Iowa is a fairly low-cost state for all health care in the state, but also very high quality when compared to states like, say, Florida or Texas.
Mm-hmm. In our next half hour, we're going to be talking about the latest phase of the implementation of the Affordable Care Act. I wonder what you can say, Keith Mueller, about how the implementation of that act, people know it as Obamacare, in the meantime, will affect health care specifically in rural Iowa.
Well, the populations the Act targets for making health insurance more affordable are disproportionately rural. That is, there's a greater likelihood of small businesses not able to afford the insurance premiums, and therefore those people are uninsured, or individuals that at best they can buy a policy with a very high deductible. There's a greater prevalence of that in rural areas, including rural Iowa. So to the extent with the Affordable Care Act, we start making insurance premiums lower and more widely accessible, that will be beneficial to rural.
What about the implementation of new policies and regulations?
The new policies, again, generally are favorable for rural because they're opening up some of the things I talked about earlier, different uses of technology, so more payment for the use of telehealth where before it wasn't a reimbursable cost to the local system, as well as facilitating the development of those systems and care integration that I talked about, the new accountable care organization approach in the Medicare program that's in the ACA, again, very helpful to rural.
Do we know what proportion of the uninsured in the country during the whole ACA debate. Of course, 30, 40 million was usually the figure thrown around. Do we know how that's divided up between rural and urban U.S.?
It's slightly higher in rural, but then different population groups. So children are pretty well insured in rural, but adults a little less so than their urban counterparts. And again, as I mentioned earlier, it's a little higher likelihood that the small businesses in rural America are not able to provide insurance coverage for themselves and their workers.
Mm-hmm. We talked a little bit about how Iowa's in fairly good shape with the shortage of healthcare professionals in rural Iowa. How will that change under the Affordable Care Act as the implementation goes on?
It'll be a lot more challenging because as more people gain insurance coverage and might seek care more frequently than they did before they had the coverage for very good reasons, you know, to see particularly primary care physicians and primary care providers. We're going to need more everywhere. And as I said earlier, in rural, it's always a challenge to recruit and retain those providers in the smaller communities.
Mm-hmm. So the type of health care may change because people – explain that a little bit. People are seeking – how has their behavior changed because the system is changing?
A lot of people who are uninsured delay seeking care or think maybe I can do without it until they're so sick that they absolutely have to get it, and then they're showing up in hospital emergency rooms or maybe even in clinics but much more acutely ill than if they'd gone in sooner. So if you remove that financial barrier, they'll come in sooner. And if they come in sooner, they can then be getting regular services routinely that might keep them from those acute care cases that end up in hospital emergency rooms.
Mm-hmm. How is sort of something like triage handled in a rural health care setting differently than in the city?
Well, you might in two ways. One, if you've got really good communications and use of telehealth, you might be able to take somebody directly into a larger trauma center if that's what you're responding to. Secondly, if you don't have all that set up, you might get transferred more quickly out of a small hospital into a larger hospital than you would in an urban environment where maybe they think they've got a greater scope of capability in the first place where you are.
Mm-hmm. Kendra Spencer, it's been nice that you've been able to join us this hour to tell us a little bit about your health care needs there in Vinton. Tell us a little bit more about Olivia. She sounds like a delightful girl. And now she's able to as she grows up and goes through preschool, she's able to interact with other children normally?
Yes, she is. She's a spunky little girl, and, you know, she's always been that way, and we just say that's her fight. So now that she's getting to play with all these other kids, it's wonderful to see her interact and come home from school and tell us about a new friend she's made. And we've also enrolled her in dance class for the first time this year, and just, you know, seeing her out there trying to dance with the other girls, it's very precious. And, you know, there's not much difference between her and the other girls. She might tire a little more easily just because of her lower oxygen saturations. But other than that, she's a spunky little girl who's full of life and makes us all so proud and cherish each day that we've got.
Well, thank you for sharing a little bit about Olivia's life with us. Olivia's mother joining us, Kendra Spencer joining us from Vinton. Thank you, Kendra.
Thank you for having me.
Also thanks to Professor Keith Mueller, the Gerhard Hartman Professor and Head of the University of Iowa's Department of Health Management Policy. As in this first half hour, we're exploring rural health care on National Rural Health Care Day. Professor Mueller, thank you for coming in.
Okay, thanks for having me.
In just a moment, we're going to delve into the Affordable Care Act and talk a little bit more about that. States have until tomorrow to decide whether they'll set up their own health insurance exchanges or default into the federal exchange. What will Iowa do? We'll find out when we get back. Join our conversation with your questions about the ACA, 1-866-780-9100. So good to have you with us on this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Healthcare, the focus of our hour today on National Rural Health Care Day. We want to shift our focus, though, from rural health care to the Affordable Care Act, known as ACA. Since health care reform has been a political flashpoint, many states waited to see who won the presidential election before deciding whether to set up a health exchange, a health care exchange, as mandated by the ACA. The federal government imposed a deadline, and it is tomorrow, a deadline for states to confirm whether they'll create their own health exchanges for consumers and small businesses. Now, states don't have to provide specific details about their plan until next month, but those that don't declare their intention by the deadline tomorrow will have to move forward with a state-federal partnership or a federal takeover. That's at least for now. The new insurance system is designed to create a marketplace where consumers and small businesses can make side-by-side comparisons when buying health insurance. Now, we've covered the politics of the Affordable Health Care Act quite a bit on this program over the last few years. Supporters of the law, if you remember, say that transparency will ultimately push costs down, while many Republicans have criticized it as an undue intrusion into the private marketplace. This half hour, we don't want to focus so much on the politics of the ACA. We want to focus more on the question of how it will change our health care environment in the state now that it is the law of the land, the new environment it creates for consumers, for small businesses, and for insurers. And joining us to talk about that, about Iowa and the ACA, is Michael Bushlow. He is a policy advisor on taxes and health care to Governor Branstad, and he is in our Des Moines studio. Michael Bushlow, welcome.
Thank you.
David Lyons is also with us, founding director and CEO at Co-Opportunity Health. I want to describe that as a nonprofit health insurance alternative. Would I be on the mark with that, David Lyons?
You'd be on the mark, Ben, and it's a pleasure to be with you and Michael today.
Well, welcome to you. Thank you very much. We want to mention, too, you have some credentials going back a few years. You were, I understand, the state insurance commissioner deputy from 88 to 94 under Governor Branstad, also state director of economic development from 95 to 2000 under Branstad and Vilsack, correct?
Correct.
Okay. We want to invite our listeners to join us this half hour as well. What questions do you have about the Affordable Care Act, what it will mean for you now that we've arrived at this next phase of implementation? 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org is our email. Iowa Public Radio is also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. First to you, Michael Bushlow. Today, through Tim Albrecht, the governor's office, Governor Terry Branstad, I understand, plans to tell the government, the federal government, tomorrow by this deadline that Iowa still doesn't have enough information to move forward with a state-based insurance marketplace. Where does that leave us in Iowa?
Well, I think the governor in his letter tomorrow will say that throughout this process, we've acted in a way that was prudent and in the best interest of the state, that we've acted to set up and take the key steps that would be needed if we wanted to set up an exchange. And in fact, that his intent the entire time, and if you look back on even the history of Tim's statements, has been that if we have to have an exchange, if we must have an exchange, and if that exchange is going to be built in Iowa, it should be built by Iowans for Iowa's unique healthcare problems. You know, we are we're a state that is certainly different from Virginia and out east, or even states like Wyoming or Colorado out west. We have unique sets of a unique set of history, and really some unique problems facing us. The governor in his letter will simply say that it's been his intention the entire time to set up an exchange. However, the problem is it's like I'd liken it to trying to buy a car without knowing the key features or the price of the car. We'd like to buy that new car. We'd like to bring that asset on because it could be helpful. But if we're going to set up an exchange, we need to know what the requirements are, what the costs will be. And unfortunately, there's been a bipartisan set of states who have failed, who have not been given those necessary pieces of information to make that purchase. Mm-hmm. And so the governor simply is going to say, and this, it's not political. It truly is practical considerations on valuation of insurance plans, how the federal call center would work versus a state call center. In a partnership model, what would our responsibilities be versus in a full state exchange? Very basic kind of implementation and operational questions. And the governor is simply saying to Secretary Sebelius, who I might add is a former governor, she knows how tough it is to implement a federal mandate if that water is at all murky. And in this case, we're facing some facts that aren't clear. And so it's tough to make fully informed decisions without those facts. The governor's going to say, it's been my intention the entire time.
Okay.
But It's been very difficult to go down that path, and we may have to default to either a partnership model or to a federal exchange without further information.
Okay, so you will the default will kick in this case by not choosing a state exchange to set up our own exchange here in Iowa. You're saying either one of those two other alternatives, the state federal partnership or the federal takeover, is what will happen with Iowa.
No, I'm not saying that. I guess I would say the governor continues to have full intention of trying to build an exchange. That to build an exchange, though, to a robust exchange that's going to answer, meet the needs of the feds, but more importantly, meet the needs of Iowans, we are missing some key pieces of information. And we need those pieces of information before we can fully commit to saying this will be up and ready by October 1st of next year. So these exchanges, no matter what level we're at, Ben, will be a partnership between the federal government and the states. No matter what, even in a federally run exchange, because of the nature of insurance markets, there's a level of partnership that's going to have to occur. We're saying in the state-based exchange, there's still that level of partnership needed. Are we checking the right boxes? And that hasn't been clear. The guidance hasn't been clear from the federal government. So the governor's letter will simply say, we intend on building that. We intend on trying to meet our deadlines, but we also require some flexibility and information from you. And if we don't get that, then we will have to look at those alternatives, which would probably be some sort of partnership-based exchange, just on the practical reality that we face. But the governor had the intent and continues to have the intent of building an exchange based in Iowa for Iowa.
David Lyons, give us your vantage point about the changes Iowans can expect under the new health care law this year on into the next.
Well, as Michael correctly points out, this work really needs to be a state and federal collaboration for the implementation of the ACA. I mean, change isn't moving forward just because of the legislation. It's also moving forward because of the economics. The pace of the increases we're seeing cannot be maintained for individuals. It's threatening the competitiveness of industry. So I love what I'm hearing, that there's a state intent to move forward with a state exchange, that we think that's a very strong opportunity. We also like what we're hearing from the federal government, that they're going to provide additional guidance and flexibility to the states in implementing. One of the key items to point out is that this isn't an issue of political gridlock. This is an issue of implementation process. And Iowa will be in a position, and Iowa consumers will be in a position to be able to access new products and new opportunities, whether it's a federal exchange, whether it's a state-federal partnership, or whether it's a state exchange. Mm-hmm. Again, we're in total agreement with Michael that a state-based exchange designed for Iowa's needs and flexible to changes in Iowa is probably the best approach. But these products can come forward and work in the marketplace regardless.
Okay. I wonder if you can make a comment, either of you, about the people that will be most affected by the ACA. Let's take a few different instances. David Lyons, can I put this to you? People who already have affordable health care, perhaps through their employer, does this affect them?
Yes, it does. Creating additional competition and additional opportunities to compare and purchase in the marketplace is always a good thing. As we know, the number of players in the commercial marketplace has been declining. The level of competition has been declining. Prices have been increasing. The ability to bring some more players and some more products into the marketplace that may have more affordable options to them, mm-hmm. that may have a more of a design for how people want to integrate healthcare. They're there. So whether it's an individual who has chronically been un- or underinsured, or whether it's somebody who's consistently been insured and is looking for additional options and opportunities, I think there's a lot of excitement coming for both groups.
And also certainly for people, I think it sounds like you're saying people who feel they pay too much for health care right now, you think this will help them?
Yes, it will, but there's a really important issue. With the federal reforms, they do significantly improve access to health care coverage. They don't necessarily drive decreases in costs until consumers are able to take advantage of them in ways that help reduce illness, reduce disease, reduce injury, and reduce the costs of seeking care. So it's really a message also that the ACA doesn't solve issues. it creates opportunities for consumers to work together to reduce their health care costs.
What about people who are uninsured, either by choice or because they simply can't afford it, haven't been able to up to now?
Significant amount of opportunity comes in not only how they can purchase, but also the potential for subsidization of their purchasing costs. I mean, if you think of three categories where an organization like Co-Opportunity Health, which is a nonprofit consumer-oriented health carrier, would partner with the state, for example, there will be a population that will remain low-income and on Medicaid programs that can be improved in efficiency and effectiveness. There are people who are above the poverty level and above low-income who want additional opportunities in the marketplace. There will be a group of people who, you know, are sometimes Medicaid eligible, sometimes private insurance eligible. I think this provides an opportunity for the state in its efforts to aggregate and control costs and improve opportunities for Medicaid population can partner with health carriers like Co-Opportunity to create medical homes and accountable care organizations to reduce the costs for the folks who are just above the poverty line but do need help maintaining their insurance.
Michael Bushlow, when we talk about those categories of people in Iowa, anything to add or adjust in what David Lyons said there?
Well, I would just really echo the statements of David. He's, you know, really an expert, and he has a great point that these exchanges address access, and they address access very immediately and directly. But our concerns and the concerns of the governor lie in the fact that in Iowa right now, we have over 90% coverage of health care. Health insurance is pervasive in our state. And we have a history of, in fact, buying health insurance through many different means, whether it's through your large employer like someone, you know, in a big employer in Des Moines or John Deere, through small businesses in these small towns, and through individuals and self-employed folks like farmers and the, you know, welders or plumbers who are servicing those farms throughout our state. We have had a history of purchasing insurance and really a high level of access. The problem has been that our costs are going up, as David also correctly pointed out earlier. And these do nothing to address costs in the short term. And in fact, what one concern we have, and this is where we seek greater clarity from the federal government, is on issues that are going to directly affect that cost. Mm-hmm. How do we value these plans? For example, today's Rural Healthcare Day, and you had, you know, a great conversation right before this on that. Well, one direct implication on rural healthcare will be how Health and Human Services, when they finally issue rules on the essential health benefits, what those essential health benefits look like. Because a state like Iowa, we have different abilities to service those needs. We have different levels of staffing of doctors and healthcare professionals than, say, states out east with a higher concentration of doctors per citizen. And so we have some real concerns on if that level of essential health benefits is really higher than what our state is working at right now, then it's going to drive costs up artificially and unnecessarily. And that's going to not just affect employers, it's going to affect people. And it's, you know, for us, the number one impediment or number one worry about this is going to be if we somehow begin creating a greater barrier for employers to create jobs and for families to raise incomes. Because if these exchanges somehow don't work on that cost issue and the cost within the exchange goes up, that's when we become nervous about that cost making it harder for businesses to create jobs and those folks to buy affordable health care insurance.
Stanley is joining us from Fayette, and I believe, Stanley, you have a question specifically about costs. Can you hear us?
Yes. I was wondering, somebody that makes $40,000 or $50,000 a year, and I know some people that pay $900 a month and have a $1,500 or $15,000 deductible. How is somebody that makes $40,000, $50,000 a year going to afford something like that?
Okay, Stanley, thank you for your question. David Lyons, can I put that one to you?
Sure. First and foremost, the issue of having choice in the marketplace is pretty important. People will want to have a policy that meets their needs. when you start talking about affordability. I worked with a very large group of individuals through the Iowa Farm Bureau. They had a great program which allowed the members to pool their risk. And I'll tell you, that's one of the things that I think individuals will be able to do, is to pool their risks through the exchange products and the exchange program to potentially start bringing some of the scale and cost that you normally see with large employers down to individuals and small businesses. I think you'll also see, though, that some of the options that begin coming to the marketplace may be more affordable because they're focused on reducing costs through the management of care. One of the pieces throughout this legislation is to create incentives and tools to move away from the payment for fee for service, where I get paid if I see somebody and do something, which obviously may not incent the reduction of use of healthcare costs, to paying people for keeping folks healthy and not having medical costs and claims. Mm-hmm. So I think that's another thing that's coming, is payment systems that are really designed to reduce the costs and incidence of medical procedures should have lower costs long-term in the marketplace.
Will this focus on health outcomes rather than procedures to pay for, does that come, that change come with the advent of these health exchanges?
Well, two things. The health exchanges will certainly allow for those types of mechanisms to accelerate their availability in the marketplace. And individuals and small businesses to clearly see the policies that provide that approach and to choose those. But a lot of the work, this is not rocket science, a lot of the work that goes behind making this movement is already occurring. And in fact, I don't mean to put Michael on the spot, but the state of Iowa actually is one of the innovators in being able to move toward using medical home and integrated care concepts to begin that movement toward health and away from sickness, and to really start showing some exciting results.
Any reaction to that, Michael, before we move on?
You know, I obviously David got my email before the radio conversation today.
Okay.
I'm just kidding, of course. But, you know, he's right. The market has been moving towards an idea of let's pay for outcomes and let's pay for healthy and making people healthier rather than just simply paying for episodic use. And it's been happening. It's something that we're beginning to use and look to use on a greater level with Medicaid in our state, so we can contain the costs of a program that have grown by over 50% since 2002. And those market reforms are something that we're looking at and trying to lead the way. And there's something that's seen throughout the state and throughout the industry as the way of the future. You know, and we hope, and part of the reason we want to manage and the governor has been committed to having a state-based exchange, was so that those very types of plans could make their way into health benefit exchanges. That
is it a little bit, though, disingenuous to say the governor has always planned to establish an exchange? He's on record as saying he's been not in favor of ACA all along. He's been against it.
No, it's not. He has been. His position and really I would say his reservations on the Affordable Care Act, you know, they've been clear since day one. But it the reason I say it's not disingenuous would be simply because of the proof is in the pudding, Ben. Since day one, he has also worked and had a work group of different agencies, Department of Human Services, the Department of Public Health, and the Insurance Division, working on what are the necessary steps to meet this. Because his number one guideline has been to protect the health and safety of Iowans and to ensure the integrity of our insurance market. And so if we had to have an exchange, if that has to go forward, then he wanted Iowa to be positioned as well as possible to meet those deadlines. And in fact, we have never missed a deadline when it comes to the health benefit exchange. We have had some folks working diligently outside of the political limelight, outside of the controversial spotlight of front page newspapers, to meet the deadlines and put Iowa in a position that many other states do not have the luxury of being in, mm-hmm. which is to say we've met our deadlines and could continue meeting deadlines. But those reservations about the Affordable Care Act, the fact that it only addresses access and does not address cost, that these exchanges do nothing directly to make people healthier. They give access to care, but it's not going to make a higher quality of care necessarily right away.
We have just a minute or so left. I want to get in a quick question. We talked about consumers, the main thrust of our conversation here, but I wonder, especially since there's a concentration of the insurance industry in Des Moines, what are the biggest challenges, David Lyons, going forward for health insurers in this changeover? Very quickly, please.
Three items very quickly. Number one, it's absolutely important that the state and the private sector get together on an education campaign so that individuals know the changes that are coming and how to take advantage of them. Number two, there's a big challenge in reaching out to consumers and telling them they're now part of the answer. The ability to use healthcare without worrying about the costs or what it does to trends, et cetera, simply because somebody else has been buying it for me in the past, is going away. They need to know how to be part of the process. And the third is that everybody's going to have to be flexible. Iowa has great insurers. There may be some carriers who, because this is now a lower margin, more consumer-centric industry, are not going to be as interested. I think there's going to be a lot of players, however, that are very interested in entering this market to provide these customized products. So education is number one, though, for the consumer.
David Lyons, thank you very much. Founding Director and CEO at Co-Opportunity Health. Michael Bushlow, thank you very much. Policy Advisor on Taxes and Healthcare to Governor Branstad. We appreciate you both joining us. Thank you.
My pleasure, Ben. Thanks.
River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.